Welcome to the Your Pleasure Path podcast. I'm Catherine Drysdale, and I'm here with Flo Oliveira. Flo is a queer polyam Afro-Brazilian sex educator who loves helping others discover and exist as their most authentic selves. At 22 years old, Flo has completed a Bachelor of Arts in Gender, Sexuality, and Women's Studies, a minor in Chicanx Studies, and was accepted into a sex educator certification program at 21, which they have been working towards attaining. Flo has now begun attending San Diego State University for their master's in marriage and family therapy. Their coursework and experience at University of California, Davis provided them high-level foundational knowledge and intersectional framework to now incorporate their passion for sex education into their career and future sex therapist role. Throughout their undergraduate years, Flo has engaged in organizations such as the Coalition for African Diaspora Student Athletes, the Revival Zine, and the Menstrual Health Task Force. Flo started their own company on Instagram called Life with Flo in 2020. Their work on social media as an up-and-coming sex coach, educator, and soon-to-be therapist has allowed Flo to become an experienced podcaster, speaker, educator, coach, sex, and relationship advisor. Flo has been featured on multiple platforms, not including Not Another Mother Runner podcasts, SAP Initiatives Live, The Revival Zine, Nuts and Bolts Sports Podcast, and much more. Flo now lives in San Diego, California with their housemate. Connect with Flo on Instagram at Life with Flo. Wow, that's quite a bio. And you've certainly accomplished so much at such a young age. So what led you to become a sex coach and sex educator, and why are you here?
I think my biggest thing that led me to become a sex coach and educator was in my junior year. I really bonded with women's studies, gender sexuality studies, and that was my focus through undergraduate. The time that really came where I like questioned what I wanted to do with life was when I decided to no longer go into pre-med and no longer do surgery. I knew I wanted to help people in some way, but I realized that wasn't quite what was right for me. And I had always been kind of an openly sexually positive person. So with my undergraduate major and kind of my life experiences, it all came together and it looked like the perfect opportunity. I kind of just stumbled upon it and looked into it, fell in love, and then it really became my passion. And then quickly after that, I also found out about sex therapy as a field and how it's coming up. And it kind of just all molded together and I started applying and really taking charge. And now I'm here.
Love that. What a journey. And that's so interesting that you have shifted your career or the trajectory of your career from pre-med into sex therapy. And while it's still related, because, you know, mental health is such a huge part of our physical health too. But what a lot of people don't realize is that like sex therapy is actually very necessary and needed because as humans, like we all have sex, even if we don't want to talk about it, we all have sex. So that's great. So throughout your sort of discovery on even getting into this field, how has your personal relationship to sexuality and gender fluidity impacted your desire to work in this field?
So I would say impacted it negatively. I think it's only impacted it positively. Mm-hmm. So just becoming who I am and like realizing that I fit in certain spaces and just like accepting myself as a whole person and like however I am has really made me bond a lot stronger with this industry and with this path. It's really led me down a path of exploration and kind of just acceptance, like radical acceptance of like who I am. And I think just with gender fluidity in general, it's a lot to decipher. I think it's really confusing when you're only given binaries in society, like man or woman. And then you're like, well, what the fuck? Well, I don't bond with either of these terms, or I bond with them somewhat, but doesn't quite fit. And just having that like radical acceptance and exploration of yourself really, really helped me. And yeah, I mean, it has only made my bond to folks and like other people who share these feelings stronger, and through that made the education for my personal life stronger too.
And that's something I definitely can see too, like within your Instagram community. It's like you have a community that's so bonded to you because like they understand you just like you understand them too. And that's great that you're able to sort of be this, this like pillar, this beacon of hope in a way for people in this community, because they're like, oh, I feel like this too, and I can relate to this person. So I feel like can give permission in a way to be like, oh yeah, I get to be myself too. And like, you're going first in a way. So when did you realize that you were gender fluid? When did you realize you didn't identify with sort of either end of the binary?
It's a really funny story, actually. So during COVID, I had already started to think about it, and I was like, well, for the longest time, I was like being pushed into these feminine roles that I didn't quite bond with. And I had always, growing up, I had always questioned my sexuality, and I like stifled it down. And then, you know, it's like the funny TikTok trend where everyone's like, you question your sexuality, and then next door is like your gender identity. And so that's kind of how it happened for me. Like during COVID, I was so certain of like my sexuality. I was so comfortable, and I was like, polyamory is my jam. Like I've known for so long now. And then I like open the next door, and it's like, fuck, well, there's a crisis for my gender identity. And so it was like one specific day that I remember I was like sitting in the room with my ex-partner, and I like turned to them and I was like, hey, I don't think I want anyone to call me a girl anymore. I don't think I want to use she, her pronouns. Like right now that really just doesn't sit right with me. It makes me feel icky inside. And I feel like I bond with they, them. And I feel like right now, maybe it's not completely clear, but I don't think my gender identity is fixed. Like, I think it's very fluid. Mm-hmm. And my ex-partner was super accepting. They were just like, oh, well, okay, that's fine. Moving on, just using your pronouns. And that was that. And that's kind of how I came out for the first time, how I really like felt settled in my realization and like had that discussion. And then from then on, it was kind of just figuring out why I felt this way and how to explain it to other people as well.
Yeah. And I feel like that's great too, that like the first time you had that conversation, like it was a positive one and you felt accepted and seen, and it sort of was like, okay, and your point, that's fine. We love that. We're here for that. Were there any conversations you had that weren't as accepting or were maybe more challenging, or has it been in general a more positive sort of coming out of your gender?
I think, honestly, I'm the type of person that doesn't really label things or doesn't really say much. I'm kind of just like, I'm out, here you go, like, do with this information what you will. So for my friends, it was very much like a, hey, by the way, I'm gender fluid, you say them pronouns for me now. And they were like, cool, okay, catch me if I like mess up, let me know. And I was like, got it. Because I already had that support system within my friends too. Yeah. Online, it was a different story. Coming out online, it was kind of like most people already know this about me, but I'm gonna like put it very openly that I am gender fluid and gender queer. And of course, like there's those people who DM you and like who comment things. And I think, yeah, of course, there's always gonna be that negative side to things and always like the heteropatriarchy kind of like beaming down on you. But overall, in my personal life, for the people that I really do care about, it's been positive.
And then how do you navigate, I guess, people who don't respect your identity? I know you posted a few graphics a few weeks ago to explain exactly like why and which pronouns you prefer and other sorts of terms of endearment, I guess. But how do you navigate people who like just blatantly don't respect your identity and how you want to be seen?
I think it's a really tricky situation. It really depends on how close you are to these people and how you're gonna approach the situation. So generally, if it's someone that has been in my life and they're just really not getting it, I'll try to have a conversation with them, try to educate them as best as I can. And it's really emotionally taxing, but usually in these conversations, it comes out with like a positive understanding or a positive light. Like, these people generally want to be in my life and like want to learn. They just truly have not had that experience before. As for other people that I don't know, I try as best as I can to create like an environment where I can educate and have that information get out there, because there's not a lot of it, but to a certain extent, because you always have to take care of your mental health as well, you know? So if someone's really just in there to hate on it and does not care what I say, then that's when I kind of call it, like, I pull out of the game. I'm just like, I'm not going to spend my energy on this. They can handle it themselves. They're grown adults. They can teach themselves if they really wanted to.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's so important too, to like recognize sort of your own energy, and really for anyone within sexuality, questioning sexuality, gender, like, I'm sure it has been an emotional and energetic roller coaster just as an individual, but also as you bring other people like into the mix too. So like, how do you recognize, like, is there a moment where you feel it in your body that like, shit, this is draining me, I disengage? Or is it more like nuanced? How do you balance your energy within these conversations and then just within being a sex educator in general?
I mean, that's a struggle that I think I've had for so long, because I'm the type of person that wants to give it my all and like educate as much as I can. But recently, like, I've really been trying to work on listening to my body. And that's like the best way I can put it, is just like, if you have a gut feeling that this is going to turn out wrong, and you know it's going in that direction, even if it's a little slightly like just beginning, like, take your time to listen to that and address why you're feeling that way. Is it like anxiety? Is it the cues, like the social cues that you're getting from the person? Really address it, because you don't want to spend an hour and a half just to find out that in the end they're going to cuss you out and tell you that you're like not worthy. So I think it's really just about listening to your body and taking that moment. Also communicating that, because the other person on the other end may not know how much they're affecting you. And I would just be transparent and honest about that and be like, hey, you know what? I don't think this conversation is going to lead to anything. I'm sorry, but I emotionally cannot do this. And back out. That's it. I think just really tuning into your body as much as you can.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, with anyone, and this can be, you know, obviously people who are like therapists, coaches, working with people one-on-one, like, we naturally will take on more than we need to, because we're empathic in nature and like want to help people. But this advice is like relevant to really anyone, is just like understanding what your triggers are, understanding the cues within your body, when you're feeling your energy, your batteries being drained, so that you can, you know, distance yourself, disassociate, take some time, but also, yeah, communicate. That's a great point too, is like, we need to be aware of our own stuff and then also communicate to whoever else is in our energy. This is what's going on. This is what I'm feeling. I'm choosing to disengage now, or like, let's table this and talk about it later when I'm feeling better. So I think that's so important with boundaries, with any sort of topic that we're discussing, that we're feeling that like heavy energy, like anything that's like really triggering. And I feel like identity inducing too, because sometimes it can feel like someone is like attacking you, when in reality it has nothing to do with you at all. It's them, it's their like perception, I guess, based on their personal bias of what they think the world should be like.
Exactly.
So I guess we sort of went into this a bit already. Would you say your sexual orientation has influenced your gender identity, right? Because you started practicing polyamory before, right? Mm-hmm. So how did everything unfold in this like beautiful journey that you're on now? Like, I'm just so fascinated by you.
So I would say it was a hot mess, like absolute shit show. And I think it's always like that for most people because we don't have that information. Like, we don't know how to go about polyamory in high school and like, why are we falling in love with so many people all at once, you know? So high school was really the like turning point for me. Like senior year, I had already fallen in love with two people. I was dating a person and I was in love with this other like amazing person that I hadn't met. And I just could not figure out why. Like, why was I having these feelings? Everyone was so clean cut about who they liked and who they didn't like, like who they were dating, and that was just it. But for me, there was just like, I don't know, this like emotional snowball of like things that just kept getting piled on. And prior to that, I had begun to accept that I liked women, and I liked other folks. So I like kind of took in my sexuality and put it to the back. I was just like, okay, we'll like take it one day at a time type thing. When I fell in love with multiple people at a time, it was kind of like, oh, now the snowball has like doubled in size.
Yeah.
And it's just rolling at this point. Mm-hmm. So I tried to address it as best as I could in high school. I wasn't really sure why, and it kind of like turned out not to be the most graceful thing. But luckily I had been communicating with these people as much as I could. And they were really understanding. Like, we still have a beautiful friendship to this day, but it was really in like freshman year of college that everything settled. Like, I moved to a new town, I moved into a new place, I was like on my own at this point, and I was there to face all my decisions. So I kind of looked at it and I was like, okay, well, what energy, what like focus do I want to bring into my life going into college, and who do I want to be? Like, this is my opportunity to experiment and try new things out and like not have judgment for myself, really. Mm-hmm. And freshman year, I was like, you know what? I think polyamory is for me. I think that's what this is. I think this is why I'm falling in love with multiple people. And you know what? I am queer. Like, I don't know why it took me so long to just say that out loud. I am queer. And I openly was like, I'm going to tell my family. I can't keep hiding this. Like, only having a close group of friends isn't doing me justice. I can't be who I am outside of that group. And so I told people outside of that close group that I had, and I told my family, and I kind of just faced it all. And I was like, whatever happens, happens. At this point, folks from my family can only do so much now that I'm on my own and like sustaining myself. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky enough. I had the privilege of having a scholarship and like being able to go to UC Davis and like having that stability within myself, because I know a lot of people don't. And that was the game changer for me. I could do that because I knew I could take care of myself. And so after that, kind of all just came out, and I like bonded with that. And then like 2 years later was when my like gender queerness, gender identity crisis came up. But that's when I like truly moved along through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it makes sense, especially when there's so many different parts of your identity and like relational dynamics too. It's like, we're not taught about the different types of relationships when we're taught sex ed. We're not really taught a lot in sex ed either. It's mostly like how to avoid an STI and how to avoid pregnancy. But like, had we had this sort of like knowledge and understanding that there are different relational structures that do work for people, and we don't all have to subscribe to a monogamous lifestyle if that doesn't work for us, it's like, knowledge is power. And so with that being said, like, for people who maybe aren't as aware of polyamory, like, how would you define it, and what would be the easiest way for someone to sort of understand what the different relational dynamics are within that for someone who doesn't know a lot about it?
I think the best way I can describe it is to think of everything as a relationship. You're in a relational dynamic with everything around the world. Your friends, your family, like your coworkers, everyone around you is in a relationship with you. And just because you're absolutely platonically in love with your one friend doesn't mean you're going to take that love to give it to other friends or to give it to other family members. Like, you're not going to dip into one cup for all the others. You're just going to kind of unconditionally love these people and mm-hmm. have these relationships. And I think that in itself, the way you we already do that with our entire life is how we do that with polyamory. We're falling in love with multiple people. We're having these relational dynamics with multiple people, regardless of like what level we're at or just what it is, or like how we engage. We're still having that dynamic, and we're not going to take a little bit from one to give to the other. It's kind of just go with it. And so I think of it like that, like a relational dynamic that isn't like dipping into one cup or another. It's kind of just all an experience that you're learning and growing together, and it's unconditional love that's being handed out.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And like for me, I'd say like I feel like I've experimented with like polyamory mostly in, I'd say like high school, college. I'd say it was more like hookups and less like emotional attachment because I was so afraid of intimacy. But like how I have described polyamory and like poly relationships is like, again, back to any relationship that you have with anyone, your friend, your coworker, your whatever. If you think about like your friend group, right? You have a few different friends. Maybe there's one friend that you really like to go on like vacation together. So that's the person that you're going to resonate with for that sort of thing. You have one that maybe has like deep talks with, one maybe you like do like the crazy going out kind of situation. So there's all these different people in your life that are part of your life, and they sort of make you feel whole in a way. Like they're a piece of your life, but you're also whole within that dynamic. But like one person maybe like you met in college that might resonate with like, I don't know, I was in a sorority. So it's like my sorority friends are different than like my online coaching friends or my spirituality friends. It's like, I feel like there's like different pieces of yourself that come out in different ways that you're able to give and exchange and flow. And that it's a sort of like dance in the dynamic. It's not necessarily like everything ends up balancing in some way, but it's not like this person fulfills all of this needs and this person fulfills all of this needs and I'm getting all of my needs met. It's more nuanced than that because relationships are more nuanced than that. Does that make sense?
Oh, most definitely. And I think it a lot into the like personality aspect and to get very psychological into it. I don't think that we have like one or the other type of personality. It's really about context and how you are within those relationships and how you are within those spaces. So definitely like in one space, you could have this immense bond over your spirituality. Whereas for the other, it's like partying or going out and like enjoying like different experiences, you know? And I think that's like how you summed it up. That's really about how polyamory is and just life in general as well.
How have you decided to sort of explore polyamory within different partnerships? Like, is it sort of like the love emotions that come first? Is it some of that like sexual charge? Does it vary person to person? Like, how do you know that you're like, yeah, damn, I want to like be in a relational dynamic with you?
I definitely think it depends person to person. I definitely approach things very openly. So I usually always tell my partners beforehand, like, hey, I'm polyamorous, like, just in case you need to know, like, here's STI testing, like, here's all the things that have been going on in my life. And like, I'm a super busy person in general. So I have to like have these conversations preemptively. But I think it really just depends because if I go to a party and I meet someone that I'm like, oh my God, I want to hook up with this person. They're amazing. They're so hot. And then we end up talking and we're like, wow, we get along a lot better, like in different contexts. Then we like move into those contexts. But I think it really just takes a couple conversations to figure that out. And then you decide person to person.
Mm-hmm. And within sort of how you practice polyamory or just are within the flow of polyamory, do any of your relationships like intersect within, or are they more relationships that you have with individual people?
Usually it's been more relationships that I have with individual people, but I am in a triad right now. I'm actually a couple who had been dating for a really long time and they're forever. It's amazing. But that is like my first like triad that I've been a part of and like willing and open to be a part of, because there's a lot of like couples privilege that kind of gets in the way as well in other circumstances. But they've put in a lot of work and I've put in a lot of work, and that one like works really well. So far it's been dependent on who it is and really how these conversations are arising and like how our values kind of mingle together.
So what made you decide to like enter within this relationship with, I guess, were they a couple first then, and then you entered? Like how did that come to be, and how did they make you feel respected and valued as you're entering their relationship that already was established?
So they were a couple beforehand. I think they had been a couple for about 5 to 6 years. And we all grew really close as friends. So we had been hanging out a lot. They knew who I was. Like, they accepted things very openly, and we've always had communication. So when I like went over, like hung out with them, and they were, especially when I changed my pronouns and like came out as gender fluid, they were like, "Hey, when do you want me to call you?" And just conversations like that is what set up the small steps for like our relationship to function better as a whole. Whether as friends or as the couple that we are now. So it just works really well because I think we had that foundation set up ahead of time, and it was like a slow progression and then all at once kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And there was that attraction, of course, and like those conversations and flirting and hinting at it. But when it came down to it and we actually had that conversation, we kind of like set things up and were very intentional about it. That's when it kind of just fell into place.
So within the triad that you're in, like, how do you all work together to sort of like set your boundaries and expectations and like desires that you have like for the relationship?
So in the triad, we're all very openly like communicative people, mm-hmm. as well as very sexually open people. Yeah. I think with like sexual and like kink things, you have to have so many ground rules and like so many boundaries, and just like throw the shame out the window, because if you can't bring up your kink and openly be like, "Hey, I'm into this, would you mind maybe trying it out with me?" then it's not going to happen. Like, it's going to be in your head forever. And I think that was a big thing that helped us, because we were all very sexual people and we're all like super open to kink. So having those baby steps of like, "Hey, by the way, I was thinking about this one thing," and like sliding it in there in the conversation, that really helped in the end. So just like having kind of like that growth and progression of like how we talk. And then boundaries in general, I don't think they're an issue. Like, we kind of just like text like, "Hey, I'm off limits today," or like, "Here's my calendar. Like, we can figure out when to do this thing." And yeah, it's never been an issue within my other relationships that I've dated outside of them either. Like, they've worked really well, and we've always had like kind of almost a style where they can communicate with my other partners too.
I love that it's so open in sort of all senses, within sexuality, within exploring kinks, within communication. Like, it sounds like really healthy dynamic, which, you know, to most people who are taught that like heteronormativity and monogamous relationship is like the ideal, it's like your proof that like you can have a healthy relational dynamic in something that's different than what we're taught is supposed to be like what we are like striving for, in a way, you know. So like that's amazing, and like I'm happy for you. I'm like, "Ooh, who are these people? I want to meet them."
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
That's so good. So then how is hookup culture like impacting your I guess participation within the polyamory community? Because you said that you're in this triad, but you also are pursuing other relationships within it too. Like, sort of, yeah, just talk to me about that.
Yeah, so actually recently I just got out of another 4-year relationship that I had, and I talked a little bit about it on my Instagram, but since then I've really taken the time to like put a pause on forming actual, like, intentional long-term relationships. I'm kind of just in it to have fun and, like, really experience the scene in San Diego. And so I'm keeping this relationship with the couple, the triad, and then moving through these other, like, hookups or, like, getting to know people, right, and forming these dynamics regardless of what comes out of it. And so the way I've experienced it down here is a little bit different than how I was when I had kind of an anchor partner for 4 years. I kind of, hookup culture, I would say, hasn't really affected me in any way. I think because for me, I've never really been the one to, like, turn anything down or even just, like, jump into something that I'm not ready for. I'm always very, like, I know kind of what I want, and I have to have those conversations because I can't hook up with these people and not tell them that I also have, like, 4 other partners, and just for safety as well. So I think just experiencing it down here has been a little bit different because I've had to readjust my expectations because I don't want to end a long-term relationship, and I have to, like, communicate that to these people as well. And yeah, I mean, it's been fun. Hookup culture is amazing for people who really want to dive deep into it. It just really doesn't fit correctly with how I view my polyamory right now.
And I think it's important to know, like, too, like, for anyone, wherever they are within their, like, sexuality journey too, it's like we can all go through phases, ebbs and flows of, like, how our desires and our needs change, because maybe at one point you want to have that, like, that deep emotional connection, that intimacy, that fulfillment, and still get, you know, that your sexual needs fulfilled too. But there are other times where you might be like, nah, I don't want any intimacy. I just want to have some hot, hot, kinky sex. And, like, that's okay too. And, you know, it's a beautiful journey because we all have control over it. Like, we get to decide what it is we want. And then we just sort of dance through life figuring out, okay, like, this is what I want right now, and how can I communicate these needs, and how can I find people who also resonate with these needs? And that's sort of, I feel like, how everything happens anyways, you know, whether you decide to pursue poly, whether you decide that you want to try something new in the bedroom, whether you decide you want to be celibate, it's all just figuring out what's right for you and sort of evolving as your journey does too. How would someone begin the process of entering a consensual and ethical polyamorous relationship?
So I actually have a friend who, like, educates on polyamory too.
Oh, cool.
She was talking about how this idea of, like, ethical and consensual polyamory kind of puts polyamory in a light that makes it seem inherently unethical or non-consensual. So I think first folks have to kind of address that, like, polyamory on its own is just another relational way to, like, engage with people. It's not inherently bad or inherently good. And so moving to that and, like, getting all that information, getting that education to jump into polyamory would be your way to go. And definitely, like, reading works from, like, indigenous polyamory folks and, like, people who practice non-monogamy in the past, really, like, expanding your horizon past just the, like, white-centered viewpoint that we usually get on polyamory. That would be your best bet, because once you have that exposure and once you start having these thoughts and conversations with folks around you, you can really figure out how you fit into polyamory and how it fits into your lifestyle, or just your person as well. So I think I would say start with a little bit of research, start with a little bit of reading, really engage with other folks who are of color and, like, in the polyamorous space, and just be, like, open to learning more, because in this space, there's so much that you can learn. No one can know everything, right? So just approaching it kindly and, like, honestly, and just willing to learn, and then taking it day by day, because polyamory is messy in the beginning. It's going to be messy throughout. You're never going to be perfect at it. So you just have to, like, really learn and go with it, kind of go with the flow.
How would someone start the conversation? Like, let's say they're in a monogamous relationship currently, and they're realizing, oh, wait, I think I want to pursue poly. how would you recommend someone goes about like that conversation with their current partner?
Yeah, so I think the best way to go about that conversation is to kind of figure out your reasoning for wanting to have polyamory in your life, figure out how it aligns with your values, and then bring it to your partner. And do it in I think or I feel form, because you don't want to be like you did this and now we have to do this kind of thing. That's never going to go well. Be very intentional about how you bring polyamory into your life and see if it's for the right reasons kind of thing. There's no harm in experimenting, but you also want to make sure you're not harming other people in the community or even your partners at the time, right? Just really figuring that out, taking some time to self-reflect. I mean, you don't have to like jump all into polyamory and like be all or nothing about it. You can take time, experiment, and if you find out it's not for you or it is for you, then that's up to you. Like, it's good, doesn't matter. Regardless, you just figure it out.
Yeah, I think that's so important, because like it's all in a way a self-discovery journey, and so we need time to figure out, explore, expand our knowledge, our worldview on like what it is to be ourselves and how we want to navigate the world. But also we can't discount and diminish like the impact that our choices, our actions, our words, our behavior has on other people, especially when we are in a relationship or relational dynamic with someone. Because yeah, it's important to sort of explore and give yourself permission to expand and do things differently, but also not necessarily like actions have consequences, but it's like there's always a reaction that is created from anything that we do, like with, you know, the butterfly effect, the domino effect. You know, if you think about it, every action, like if I were to drop this mic on the ground, I might break it, right? Or a positive impact is like, oh, maybe like I drop it and it ends up being caught by a dog bed, so it doesn't break, and like that's okay. So it's like conversations can go really well and have a positive impact, and your partner might be like, oh yeah, actually this is something that I've wanted to explore too, or let's talk about it further. Or it could be like, maybe this doesn't work for them, and that might be an opportunity to maybe have a break in the relationship, or figure out your own needs as an individual also within the partnership, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. And I think also a lot of people see polyamory as kind of like a resistance to colonization, kind of like decolonizing themselves, and it's something they really bond with on a personal level as well as like a political and like resistance level. And my friend that I was talking about earlier, her Instagram is anti-mononormativity, and she talks about this a lot. Having polyamory is also a resistance form, and like educating yourself through like non-monogamy that has been experienced by Indigenous groups. And I think having that as a foundation and like as a basis, you can figure out for yourself how to have these conversations as well, and how to like integrate it into your partnerships and see if it's good for you and if you're doing it for the right reasons, and like what the responses and reactions could be and how to handle those as well. And like, even when it's inside of yourself, even if your partner's completely fine with it, but you end up having some feelings or just reactions yourself that you didn't expect, like you have this foundation to fall back on and really reflect on it.
Yeah, I think it's really important that we take the time to, yeah, reflect, to educate, and see how other people are doing it. And I think too, it could be also just like having conversations with other people in the community. Or if you see someone that you're like, oh, I love the way that they're living their life and their lifestyle and their identity, and I'm sure you would be open to having people like talk about like their relationship to poly and like why they would consider it. So like, you know, finding resources where you can have those conversations if you're feeling worried about having that conversation with a current partner, or even within your own identity.
Yeah, I think, yeah, just finding those resources would be important, like you said. I mean, it goes a long way when you have kind of that foundation for yourself. And then just like having these pages that you follow as well, that like always post these resources and have these conversations, like myself and you and like all these other polyamorous folks who like talk about it openly, is really, really helpful. I think that 100% changes how you initially jump into polyamory too.
Yeah, because knowledge is power. And the more we have in our orbit that are sort of what we resonate with and what we want to explore, the easier it is going to be for us to understand ourselves and continue to interact with the world. Do we want to talk about sex, crazy sex stories? Are we into it? Okay. So what's... I almost want to be like, what's the craziest sex story that you have?
Oh, actually, I think, so I had just graduated high school, I think. I just like, I was like newly 19 and I was like, you know what, screw this. I'm going to do something crazy. And at the time I wasn't as like well-versed in like sex education, of course. So I was like, this is absolutely insane, like this is the thing that no one does, and like it's dirty, it's novelty, it's like amazing, kinky, right? And so I hooked up, I had a foursome with like one of my two other people that we didn't really know, and it was amazing, it was super fun. It was probably not the best place to do it. We did it like upstairs at a party, and it was just like wild.
So
like,
totally not planned.
People could hear the bed creaking downstairs. Everyone knew what we were doing. And like, yet there was no care in the world. Like we did what had to be done, essentially. And we like talked about it too. Right before we like all got into it, we were like, are we actually doing this? Like, this is kind of wild. Like, are we sure? And then it happened and we were like, we don't regret that at all. Like, that was amazing. And I think that by far my like most wild, spontaneous, like very turn the page type book story. And of course I've had like super kinky and like amazing experiences recently as well. But I think everyone kind of looks to like the spontaneous ones that you like never planned for amazing. Yeah.
Who initiated the foursome?
Me and my best friend, actually.
Oh, did you see them and you were like, yeah, like, let's do it?
Ooh. We were like, you know what? We might as well. Let's just do it. And then we just like, okay, let's go talk to them. And we jumped into it.
I love that. I love that. That's so good. Yeah, I've had quite a few threesomes and all of them have been spontaneous, like people that I've met like at bars. And I think that's also part of me too. It's like, I personally would rather have a threesome with people I don't know than someone that I do know, because it's, I don't know, like I see my friends as my friends. For me, the dynamic is more structured. But also then I feel like for me personally, I have like less inhibition. Like I'm able to just do whatever I want and know that I'm never going to see these people again. So like, to me, it almost like gives me permission to be exactly who I want to be and like ask for what I want and what not to. But yeah, I've had quite a few threesomes with random men from bars.
I mean, there's also that like, you like, novelty of the person and like this new person in your life, and just like being able to release all these like expectations and just kind of have everything set out there is just what makes it really truly fun. So definitely see an appeal.
Yeah. What about maybe like what's like the kinkiest thing that you've done in a hookup that you feel comfortable sharing, obviously?
So I don't know, actually. I have pretty kinky sex regularly. It's actually like my preferred method of like sexual experiences. And I like recently got, I don't know if you can tell, all these paddles and like
I love.
So at any point, like if I like know I'm gonna engage in kink with people, I usually have like paddles ready to go, stuff like that. I can think my most recent like kinky thing was like a hotel meetup, and I just like met up with this person who had been in my life before, definitely an ex.
It's okay, it happens. Sometimes that's the hottest sex though, because like you know them intimately and you're already comfortable, so it's like you're like, it doesn't matter, let's just
fucking. And you know what, it was really hot. It was probably like the best sex I've had recently, like within the like past 2 months. And we just tried so many new things. There was like no restraints, and well, to put it, that was funny. Like I used the wrong word. Like there wasn't no restraints, but there was. and so like, you know, those like pills and stuff that you take that are like vasodilators and like have like new experiences and like feel new things. Yeah, we took some of those and like had like a whole 5-hour session, and wow, it was just like ink and like breaks and like aftercare, and it was amazing. That one for sure.
I love that. I love that. That's so good. So within kink then, would you say when you're exploring kink in your like relationships and hookups, would you say that's sort of the center? Would you say that's like established? Do you have a set dynamic that you like to explore within kink? Like, would you say you're more prone to want to like top or bottom or bra? I know there's so many different dynamics even within kink space, so like is that more flowy, or are you like, I really want to do this, let's do this, and then you find the person that resonates with that? Like, how does that work within your sex life?
I'm a very flowy person in general, like fluid, and so it really just depends on what the person's willing to do and what I'm willing to do in the moment. It definitely also depends on the negotiation. So before I engage in someone, I preemptively like mention it and we talk about it. So if you're like not comfortable with paddles, it's not going to be an option that night, unless you like want to like learn or have experience before as well. So definitely depends on the person, because I don't ever want to jump into these situations without fully being ready or comfortable and like having my partners ready and comfortable. But yeah, I think it's just an ongoing flow of like different information and different people and like figuring it out, how we like bond together and how we go together. I will say though, I'm very new to kink. So within the last like year since like having this like long-term relationship and also coming out of it, kink has been like my new form of exploration. So I can't really speak too much on it because I'm also just now learning. But I definitely know that having that negotiation is one of the biggest things that I've been like prioritizing as well.
So how would someone start that negotiation process if within their, I guess, sex life with whatever new partner or existing partner for exploring more kink within their sex life?
Yeah, so I just made a post about this actually, and I think you like put it on.
Yeah,
and it was ladies list.
Yes, baby. Yes.
Yeah, and I think that is a great way to start out with it. So the yes, no, maybes list is just a list of like kinky sexual things that you would like to do with your partner or partners. And you fill out like the ones that you would do, you wouldn't do, and you'd consider, right? And then you exchange these lists and you talk about it openly. And I think that's always been kind of my go-to. Like if I've been hooking up with someone like consecutively, I'll slide them the list and be like, hey, let's do this together. Like, let's talk about it, see what else we can explore in the future, or like what's on the table now. And that has been part of my negotiation. So I always tell them like my triggers, things that are really off the table, things that I would maybe consider, but like in certain conditions or contexts. And that has been like the biggest part of the negotiation for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's important too for anyone who wants to explore kink. A lot of the time the negotiation occurs like way before you're even about to have sex, like at a, like a neutral setting where like, you're like, okay, this is what I want to explore at some other time, to make sure that every person has sort of like a right to consent to everything and doesn't feel like coercion to do something that they're feeling lukewarm about. But I feel like too, sometimes there might be things where when you look at a list, you're like, I don't want to do this at all, hard limit. But context is key too. In the moment when you're feeling aroused, you might be like, oh, actually, I do want you to spit in my mouth, even though I thought it was the grossest thing ever. So like your desires, your kinks can change and evolve just like you do through your sexuality.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think that's the benefit of having those negotiations ahead of time too, because then you come up with like your safe words and like, or use like a red, green, yellow system. And then during that time, you can also be like, hey, by the way, I'm feeling this thing and I'm completely like ready for it, especially like in a good headspace for it. So we can try this now, like you're saying. And then you also have the systems in place, like safety words and like safe keys to be like, actually, never mind, I didn't like it. Like, let's stop, or like say your word, you know, and move on. But yeah, it can definitely happen in multiple settings. It really just depends, but definitely have it in a neutral setting for the first few times as well, just to establish foundation.
And then how do you integrate aftercare within like your sex life? Would you say that there's aftercare in any sort of like sexual interaction that you have with your partners, or would you say that's more focused on when you're doing like a kink scene?
I would say that it's in any relationship with any partners, whether it's like sexual or platonic and you're just having like a heart to heart. You always want to like bond with that person and like sit there and be like, are you okay? Like, do you want some food? Like, let's, you know, vibe it out, like really make ourselves feel a little bit better. Especially in like a sexual setting, even if it's not a very kinky setting, I think just having like a box under your bed with like some things for aftercare, like maybe chocolates or like a blanket, like a fuzzy blanket that you can like pull out and like cuddle under. And that goes for kinky sex too, like having maybe massage oils, massage time after, or just like, you know, ice to like put on the bruises or put on the marks, the blankets and like air, you know, all those things. I think that's for every setting would be beneficial.
Yeah. And I think it's important too, just like, you know, your sexual preferences, your aftercare preferences, maybe different partner to partner, day to day, context to context. Like I personally, like I'm a cuddler. I love to be like the fucking koala, like arms, legs, like all around. I like pillow talk. I like having the deep conversations, but I've had partners in the past that have not wanted any of that. Like their version of cuddling is like, okay, let's touch toes because it's too fucking hot. I need to cool down and just like breathe. So It's important. Everyone's needs are different. So like by having that conversation with your partner or partners, you're able to figure out, okay, how can I get my aftercare needs met and also meet yours? So there's some sort of element of compromise too, just like with anything, with any sort of relationship.
100%.
So what do you wish you knew about pleasure when you started having sex and started exploring your sexuality?
Ooh, this is a good question. I think what I wish I knew about pleasure is that it doesn't always have to be paired with shame. A lot of the time growing up, especially with discovering my sexuality and polyamory, I was like, well, I want to do this thing that brings me a lot of pleasure. But now, because it seems to be against like societal values or even my values at the time, it's going to bring me this immense amount of shame, and that on its own should be enough to stop me. And I think I wish I had known that I could face the shame and remove it from my life by like accepting myself and like educating myself, and have that pleasure without the negative effects, and really just have the conversations and that lead to that pleasure without the like residual effects that I would like have behind if I hadn't taken that step, you know? So definitely pleasure without shame.
Yeah. And I think that's important too, because like even within sex education, within conversations that we have with our family members, our peers, even within porn, pleasure really isn't something that is discussed or even taught about in any capacity. I know when I started exploring my sexuality and I started having sex at 14, but I felt shame around and like disgust around oral sex. I did not want anyone to go down on me because I felt disgusted by it. But now I'm like, I'm the type of person where like, if you won't go down on me, I'm kicking you out. Like, this is non-negotiable. So it's interesting to see, it's like, what would my sex life would have been had we had that conversation around like pleasure, and that your pleasure matters. And it's also not always about reaching orgasm too. You can experience pleasure without anyone climaxing. It can just be on like focusing on what feels good in the moment and always sort of like chasing what feels good, as long as it's, you know, ethical and consensual.
Most definitely, yeah.
I feel like we've covered so much. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us today?
As of right now, I think the only thing that's been in the back of my head for a really long time is to really get the message out to follow and engage with like your Black sex educator creators. Instagram is putting us through a tough time right now. And as usual, of course, but even tougher recently. So definitely go support, reach out, do the work, help some folks.
Hell yeah. If you have a list of Black sex educators too that you'd like to share with me, I would love to share it in the show notes here as well as on the Instagram page so that everyone can engage and support and get the knowledge that everyone needs. I love that. And how can our listeners connect with you? What's a way that they can work with you? And do you have any offers at the moment?
Yeah, of course. So you can connect with me on Instagram and on Twitter at Life with Flow. That's going to be LIFEW Flow, FLO. And I also have a website, www.lifewithflow.com. And anything that I have for offers and giveaways and stuff will be on my page coming soon. So definitely give it a follow and keep on the lookout.
Awesome. Yay. Thank you so much for being on here today. I know I learned a lot, and I'm so excited to share sort of this part of sexuality with people and, you know, show that there's different ways that we can do things that are not the norm, and it's okay. And you can have a healthy sex life, healthy relationships, even outside the norm. So thank you so much for being open, being vulnerable, and sharing with us. And it's just been such a pleasure.